Welcome to the deep dive. You've given us your sources, and we're here to dig in and pull out the most interesting stuff, basically give you a fast track to getting up to speed.
Exactly.
And today, we're diving deep into the linguistic history of Kurmanji Kurdish. That's also known as Northern Kurdish.
Right. And it's a language with a huge footprint. Like you said, Northern Kurdish. It's the most widely spoken variety. We're talking maybe 15, possibly even 20 million speakers.
Wow, that many.
Yeah, spread across this vast historical region, Kurdistan, which, you know, covers parts of modern-day Turkey, Iran, Iraq, Syria, Armenia, Azerbaijan.
Right.
And also big diaspora communities all over the world now.
Okay. So our mission today for you, the listener, is basically to get a handle on where Kurmanji came from, how it evolved, and all the different things that have shaped it over, well, centuries.
And it's a fascinating story, but also a complex one. There are definitely some scholarly debates, partly because, well, the written records, they're quite recent compared to how old the language likely is.
Makes sense. So what ground are we covering?
We'll look at its classification, like where does it fit in the big language family tree? We'll talk about its origins, its relationship with ancient Iranian languages. That's always interesting.
Uh-huh.
Then how it spread out geographically, how it split into different dialects,
mm-hmm.
you know, historical events, modern borders, all that playing a role.
And the influence from other languages. It's in a real crossroads region.
Absolutely crucial. We'll look at what it borrowed from neighbors. And finally, the story of how it came to be written down, especially focusing on that Latin-based script, the Hoar alphabet.
Okay, great. And why is this important for our listeners? I mean, beyond just being interesting language history.
Well, understanding Kurmanji's past isn't just for, you know, linguists. It's actually pretty vital for anyone interested in the broader history of Iranian languages.
Right.
And maybe even more importantly, it's key to appreciating the cultural heritage, the identity of the Kurdish people themselves.
Yeah, language carries so much culture.
It really does. Kurmanji is like this vessel holding cultural values, generations of oral traditions, collective memory. It's huge.
Hmm.
And its evolution, how it changed over time, it really mirrors the incredibly complex sociopolitical history of the Middle East. It's all intertwined.
So where do we start? Classification seems like the logical place.
Agreed. Let's pin down where it fits. So the big picture. Kurmanji is part of the Indo-European language family. Huge family.
Like English, French,
yeah.
Russian, Hindi.
Exactly. And within that, it's in the Indo-Iranian branch.
Got it.
Then within Indo-Iranian, you have this major split. Iranian languages and Indo-Aryan languages.
Mm.
Kurmanji is firmly in the Iranian sub-branch.
Okay, Iranian, like Persian.
Precisely. And within Iranian itself, there's another key division. Western Iranian versus Eastern Iranian languages.
Right.
Kurmanji belongs squarely in the Western Iranian group. That puts it alongside languages like Persian, Balochi, others like that.
And that's different from Eastern Iranian languages.
Like Pashto, spoken in Afghanistan and Pakistan. Or Ossetian in the Caucasus. They have different historical developments. Kurmanji shares key traits with the Western group.
Okay, Western Iranian. But I remember reading, it gets even more specific, something about Northwestern versus Southwestern.
You got it. That's where the real discussion, the nuance comes in. Inside Western Iranian, you have these two main subgroups, Northwestern and Southwestern.
And Kurmanji's placement there is debated.
Well, the traditional classification, the one you'll see most often, puts Kurmanji in the Northwestern group.
Okay. Why Northwestern?
Historically, this was based on observations that Kurmanji shares some, let's say, older, more conservative sound features with Parthian.
Parthian.
Yeah.
There's a major language in ancient times, right? The northwest of Iran.
Exactly. A big middle Iranian language. And these shared features seem to distinguish both Kurmanji and Parthian from Persian, which is the classic example of a southwestern Iranian language.
Can you give an example of one of those shared northwestern features? Something concrete.
Sure. A classic one involves how certain sounds from the very ancient ancestor language, Proto-Indo-European, specifically voiced velar sounds, like a G when they came before front vowels.
Okay.
They tended to change into a sound like the is in measure in both Kurmanji and Parthian. Think of Kurmanji jin or jin, meaning woman.
Dijud.
Parthian had a similar word, jun. But if you look at New Persian, the modern language, the same root word became zan. See the difference? Kurmanji and Parthian go one way, Persian goes another Z.
Okay, I see the pattern. Kurmanji aligns with Parthian there. Any others?
Yeah, another example involves Proto-Indo-European voiceless velars like K when they were between vowels, specifically after a vowel and before a front vowel.
Right.
These also tended to become zh in Kurmanji, like the word ji or zhi, meaning from. That comes from an old Iranian form, hacha.
Jiji from hacha.
Yeah. But in New Persian, the equivalent word is as. Again, Kurmanji shows a development similar to what we think happened in Parthian, different from Persian. These kinds of sound correspondences were key to that initial Northwestern classification.
Okay, that makes the Northwestern argument clear. But you hinted it's not the whole story. Why is that classification challenged?
Because, well, as linguists dug deeper into Kurmanji and other Kurdish varieties, they started noticing something else. While Kurmanji definitely has these Northwestern traits, it also shares a surprising number of features, including some specific linguistic innovations, like new ways of forming words or sounds with the Southwestern languages, especially with Persian.
So it's got elements of both.
Kind of, yeah. It complicates the picture. Some scholars even suggest that maybe within the whole Kurdish language family, Kurmanji leans more Northwestern, while the other main varieties, Sorani and Southern Kurdish, might actually have stronger connections to the Southwestern group.
Interesting. So what's the evidence for these Southwestern links in Kurmanji?
There are several good examples. Let's take the Proto-Indo-European sound clusters, Chira or TL.
Okay.
The way these developed in Kurmanji seems to follow the Southwestern path, not the typical Northwestern one. They went through a stage in Proto-Iranian as fair, like a th sound plus R.
Right.
Then in Old Persian, that became ser, sort of like a soft she sound. And eventually in Kurmanji, it ended up as an S sound.
So ser becomes S in Kurmanji.
Basically, yeah. Take the word for three. In Kurmanji, it's se.
So
compare that to Avestan, another old Iranian language often seen as more Northwestern, which has feryu. But Old Persian had a related form with ses, and New Persian has se. So Kurmanji se lines up neatly with Persian se.
Got it. That's a clear Southwestern link. What else?
Another one, word initial W in Proto-Iranian. Before the vowel la, this W sound changed to a B sound in both Kurmanji and New Persian.
W to B.
Yeah. So the word for wind is ba in Kurmanji and bad in New Persian. But the older Avestan form is vata, keeping the V, which represents the W sound. This W to B change is thought to be a shared development that happened after the Middle Iranian period.
Okay, so that's a later connection between Kurmanji and Persian. I'm starting to see the complexity here.
Exactly. It's a real mix. Another point. Both Kurmanji and New Persian tend to preserve the Proto-Iranian sound cluster for at the beginning of words, maybe sometimes adding a little vowel in between.
If or?
Like in?
Like in the word to sell. It's firotin in Kurmanji and forugstan or forstan in New Persian.
Mm.
Many other Northwestern languages actually change that initial four cluster in different ways.
Okay.
And one more, a grammatical one. The way the past tense stem is formed for many verbs. In Kurmanji, Persian, and also Balochi, another Western Iranian language, they often use a suffix that includes the vowel, like it in Persian and Kurmanji, it in Balochi. This is seen as a relatively old grammatical innovation that these languages share, setting them apart from some others. So Kurmanji definitely isn't fitting neatly into just one box. It's got Northwestern roots, but strong Southwestern branches, or maybe grafts.
That's a good way to put it. And scholars actually noticed these connections quite early on. People like Paul Tedesco, D.N. McKenzie, they pointed out these links, challenging that strict Northwestern label.
Right.
And more recent linguists like Gernot Winfer, Pierre Lecoq, they also argued for closer ties between Kurdish and Persian, or maybe even with a group called the Central Iranian Dialects.
So pulling all this together, what's the current thinking? Is there consensus view now?
I think a helpful way to look at it comes from Ludwig Paul. He summarizes the contemporary view pretty well. The idea is that Kurdish, the ancestor language, probably did originate as a Northwestern Iranian language or dialect group.
Okay, so starting Northwestern.
Right. But then because of very long and very intense historical contact with Persian-speaking populations, it ended up absorbing a lot of Southwestern features. It's a classic case of what linguists call linguistic convergence. Languages rubbing up against each other for centuries, influencing each other.
So an originally Northwestern language became heavily Southwesternized through contact.
Essentially, yes.
Yeah.
It adopted many Southwestern traits. So this whole debate about classification, it really just highlights this incredibly dynamic history of interaction between different West Iranian peoples over millennia.
That makes a lot more sense than trying to force it into one category.
Yeah.
Okay, now how does Kurmanji relate to the other major Kurdish varieties? You mentioned Sorani and Southern Kurdish earlier. Are they just dialects of Kurmanji or?
Good question. Kurmanji, as we've established, is one of the three big players in the Kurdish language family, alongside Sorani, also called Central Kurdish, and Southern Kurdish.
And Leki, you mentioned that too.
Right. Leki is often grouped with Southern Kurdish, but its exact position is sometimes debated. It might be a bit distinct. But yeah, Kurmanji, Sorani, Southern Kurdish are the main three. Together, they form what linguists call a dialect continuum.
Dialect continuum, meaning languages blend into each other geographically.
Right.
Like people in neighboring villages understand each other, but people far apart don't.
Exactly that. But, and this is a big but, the differences between these major groups, especially between Kurmanji on one side and Sorani and Southern Kurdish on the other, are actually quite significant.
How significant can speakers understand each other?
Often, not easily, if at all, if they only speak their own variety. Mutual intelligibility is pretty low between the major groups. The linguist Cranbrook made a famous comparison.
Yeah.
He said the linguistic distance between Kurmanji and Sorani is maybe comparable to the distance between English and German.
Wow, English and German. That's quite a gap. So fundamental differences.
Pretty fundamental, yeah. Especially in grammar. For instance, Kurmanji has kept grammatical gender nouns are either masculine or feminine.
Like French or German.
Exactly. And it also has a case system, two cases, direct and oblique, where the form of a noun changes depending on its job in the sentence. Sorani has basically lost both of those features. Gender is gone. The case system is gone. That's a huge grammatical difference right there.
Definitely. And other differences too. Pronunciation. Vocabulary.
Yes, there are definitely differences in pronunciation and vocabulary as well, though maybe Cranbrook's English-German comparison stretches it a bit there. But the grammatical differences are stark. Linguistically, Kurmanji is generally seen as more conservative.
Meaning it's kept older features.
Exactly. It's preserved more features from earlier stages of Iranian languages, both in its sounds and its grammar. Sorani, partly because of its geographical location and history, shows more influence from other languages nearby, including another Iranian language called Guarani.
Okay. So when we say Kurdish, it's really an umbrella term covering these related but distinct language varieties.
That's the best way to think about it. They are definitely related, stemming from a common linguistic origin, and their speakers share a common ethnic identity. So Kurdish works as a collective term.
But speakers themselves might identify more with the specific variety.
Very often, yes. They might say they speak Kurmanji or Sorani or Kalhori, a southern Kurdish dialect, rather than just Kurdish.
Got it. Now, what about Zazaki and Guarani? You hear those names too. And sometimes people who speak them identify as Kurdish. How do they fit in linguistically?
That's a really crucial distinction to make. While, yes, many speakers of Zazaki and Guarani absolutely identify ethnically as Kurds.
Right.
From a purely linguistic standpoint, based on historical sound changes and core grammatical structures, linguists classify Zazaki and Guarani as distinct West Iranian languages. They form their own branches, separate from the Kurdish group proper, Kurmanji, Sorani, Southern.
So different origins, even if they've influenced each other.
Exactly. They have separate roots based on historical phonology. There are clear linguistic boundaries, despite centuries of contact and mutual influence. Guarani actually has its own interesting history as an important literary language for a time.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, particularly in the Ardalan Principality and for the Alihak religious community. But Sorani largely took over that literary role in the 20th century.
So we need to be careful with the term Kurdish. It has a linguistic meaning and a broader ethno-linguistic one.
Precisely. For a historical linguist, Kurdish usually means that continuum of Kurmanji, Sorani, and Southern Kurdish assumed to come from a single proto-Kurdish ancestor.
Okay.
But in the broader cultural sense, Kurdish often functions as an identifier that includes people who speak Zazaki and Guarani too, because they share the Kurdish ethnic identity. It's vital to keep that dual usage in mind.
Okay, that really clarifies the linguistic map. Now let's dig into the deeper origins of Kurmanji itself. You mentioned the lack of early written records makes this tricky, like piecing together a puzzle with lots of missing pieces.
That's a perfect analogy. It's a major hurdle. We just don't have known direct linguistic ancestors for Kurdish from the old Iranian period that's before roughly 400 BCE.
Okay.
Or the middle Iranian period, which runs from about 400 BCE up to around 900 CE. We have texts in Old Persian, Middle Persian, Parthian from those eras.
The big empires.
Exactly. But nothing comparable for whatever language or languages directly evolved into modern Kurdish.
So the first actual Kurdish texts we can point to are much, much later.
Much later. Generally, the earliest substantial written texts we have in Kurdish, mostly Kurmanji and Sorani, don't really appear before the 16th century CE. before that. Just tiny fragments, possible mentions.
Mm-hmm.
It's very sparse.
Wow, a huge gap. So how do linguists even begin to reconstruct the history?
Primarily through the comparative method.
Comparing Kurdish dialects with each other.
Yes, comparing the different Kurdish dialects, Kurmanji, Sorani, Southern, Lucky, to see what features they share, where they differ, and try to work backwards to a common ancestor, Proto-Kurdish.
Okay.
And also comparing Kurdish with other related Iranian languages, both the ancient ones we do have texts for, like Avestan, Old Persian, Parthian, and modern ones like Persian, Baloki, Pashto, looking for shared patterns, shared innovations, shared vocabulary.
So using indirect clues from relatives, basically.
Exactly. It's linguistic detective work.
Does this lack of early texts tell us anything about the speakers themselves, the proto-Kurds?
It might suggest their historical circumstances were different from, say, the Persians or Parthians, who had established state structures and writing traditions.
Like maybe they were more nomadic or lived in more remote areas or just didn't have a centralized state pushing for writing.
All possibilities. Maybe they didn't use writing extensively for their own language, preferring oral traditions. Maybe records existed but were lost, or parchment doesn't last forever, especially in turbulent regions.
Right.
Or maybe Kurdish, as a clearly distinct linguistic entity, emerged a bit later, perhaps through a merging of different dialects among groups that weren't part of those main literate civilizations early on.
So lots of uncertainty before the 16th century.
A significant degree, yes. We're dealing with reconstructions and educated guesses based on comparative evidence, not direct textual proof for the earliest stages.
Okay. Given that, what connections have scholars explored with those known ancient languages, like Median, Parthian, Old Persian? Did any of them feed into Kurmanji?
Let's take Median first. Language of the Median Empire, based in western Iran, roughly 700 to 550 BCE. Geographically, it's right in the area.
So a likely candidate.
Geographically, yes. And some early linguists did kind of lump Kurdish under Median. The problem is, Median itself is barely attested. We have loan words in Old Persian, mentions by Greek writers like Herodotus, but no real Median texts.
Yeah, hard to compare then.
Very. We can see some non-Persian features in Old Persian that might be Median, and some of those look vaguely northwestern Iranian, like Kurdish. But is Kurdish a direct descendant of Median? No conclusive evidence. Some scholars, like Winfer, talked about a Median substratum.
Meaning Median influenced the language that later became Kurdish.
Right. But even then, Winfer mostly identified that substratum as being Parthian, actually.
Okay, so Median is a maybe but unlikely direct ancestor. What about Parthian? We already talked about the shared northwestern feature.
Exactly. Parthian, language of the Parthian Empire, Sikinji, 247 BCE, 224 CE. Kurmanji definitely shares those conservative sound features with Parthian, which is why it gets that northwestern label.
So maybe Kurmanji is descended from Parthian.
Some scholars, like Winfer, again, argued that essentially, yes, Kurdish dialects are basically forms of Parthian. But that's not the majority view now.
No.
Why not? Most linguists see it more as, well, maybe collateral descent, like cousins, not parent-child. Both Kurmanji and Parthian might descend from some older, unattested, northwestern Iranian branch.
Or maybe just strong influence because they were neighbors.
That too. Aerial influence is huge in that part of the world. So connection to Parthian, definitely. Direct ancestor, probably not. More like siblings or cousins within the northwestern family, plus lots of mutual influence.
Okay. And Old and Middle Persian.
Yeah.
The southwestern languages. We know Kurmanji shares features with them too.
Right. Old Persian, Achaemenids, Middle Persian, Sasanians.
Yeah.
Despite Kurmanji's northwestern core, those shared innovations and vocabulary with Persian are undeniable. It points to really long, really intense contact, convergence.
Could Kurmanji just be a dialect of Persian that diverged?
That was an older view sometimes floated, but it's pretty much rejected now by historical linguists. If you look at core vocabulary similarity, it's something like 51-52% between Kurdish and Persian.
Which sounds high, but maybe isn't high enough.
Exactly. It indicates a close genetic relationship, for sure. They're definitely related West Iranian languages, but it's well below the threshold linguists usually use to classify something as just a dialect of another language. They're distinct languages, albeit closely related ones, with a complex shared history.
So it seems Kurmanji didn't just pop out of one single ancient language. It emerged from that whole West Iranian milieu, interacting with Medes, Parthians, Persians.
Precisely. A complex web of relationships, which also makes it really hard to pin down an exact geographical origin, an Urheimat, for Proto-Kurdish.
Where do people think it might have started?
Theories vary. Some scholars look east, suggesting links to Eastern or Central Iranian dialects. Winfer and Fry had interpretations pointing that way. Others favor an origin somewhere in Western Iran, maybe in a zone between the main northwestern and southwestern areas. One specific idea posits an origin north of Isfahan.
In central West Iran.
Yeah. With the speakers then migrating north and west into modern Kurdistan, picking up more northwestern features through contact as they moved.
But it's hard to know for sure.
Very hard. Continuous migrations of Iranian peoples over millennia, plus that pervasive long-term influence of Persian everywhere, It really muddies the waters for pinpointing a single origin spot.
Okay, the deep origins are murky, but we do start getting actual glimpses of Kurmanji or something like it in later historical texts.
Yes, exactly. Once we get into the medieval and post-medieval periods, things become slightly clearer, though still fragmentary at first.
Like what? What are the earliest hints?
Well, there's a potential mention in a 10th century book about alphabets by Chaldean writer Ibn Washiya. Needs careful interpretation, though. Then, in the 13th century, there's a big geographical dictionary by Yaqut al-Hamawi Mujam ul-Buldan. It has a passage describing something in the mountains, and it includes a few words.
That look like Kurmanji.
That some scholars think could be early Kurmanji. Again, interpretation is key and debated.
Yeah.
But it's suggestive.
But the first actual solid text, You mentioned something really interesting earlier.
Ah, yes. The earliest piece that most linguists agree is, recognizably, Kurmanji is pretty unexpected for some. It's a Christian missionary prayer.
Christian, not Islamic or Yazidi.
Right, dated to the first half of the 14th century. And what's also fascinating is how it was written. In the Armenian script.
Wow. So Kurmanji written in Armenian letters in the 1300s.
Exactly. And there's mention of another similar text, a translation of an Armenian prayer into what was called Median from the early 15th century, possibly also Kurmanji.
What's the significance of these Christian texts?
It's really significant because the main Kurmanji literary tradition that blossoms later from the 16th century on is largely within an Islamic cultural context. And the Yazidi holy texts are also in Kurmanji.
Right.
But these earlier Christian attestations suggest that Kurmanji was being used and written down across different religious communities, even in its early documented stages. It wasn't confined to just one group. It hints at a broader literacy, perhaps, than previously thought.
So maybe around the 14th century, people are starting to write Kurmanji more deliberately.
It seems that way. A growing interest, maybe coinciding with periods where Kurdish principalities had more stability. But it takes a couple more centuries for that distinct, confident Kurmanji literary tradition to really take off.
Famous poets.
Exactly. Mm. The 16th century sees figures like Malaya Siziri, Fakih-i Tehran, and then later the great Emadé Zani in the 17th century. That's when Kurmanji literature really establishes itself firmly.
That's a fascinating journey from obscure fragments to a full literary tradition. Okay, let's shift gears now to how Kurmanji spread out and diversified. Where is it spoken today, and how did history shape that?
Right. So geographically, Kurmanji covers the northern swath of the traditional Kurdish homeland. The biggest chunk is in southeastern Turkey. Provinces like Diyarbakir, Van, Mardin, Şırnak, many others.
Okay, Turkey is the heartland. Where else?
Northern Syria, think Afrin, Kobani, Qamishli. Northern Iraq, mainly in the Dohuk governorate, the area sometimes called Badenin.
Uh-huh.
Then also parts of northwestern Iran, like West Azerbaijan province, and also northeastern Iran, in North Khorasan province, a result of historical deportations.
Wow, Khorasan too. That's far east.
Yeah, a long history there. Plus, significant communities in the Caucasus, especially Armenia, historically also Azerbaijan and Georgia.
Yeah.
And scattered groups in central Anatolia in Turkey.
And the diaspora, of course.
And a huge diaspora, especially in Western Europe. Uh-huh. Germany has a very large community, and also in the big cities of Western Turkey, like Istanbul.
That's a massive spread. And history must have played a huge role in creating that map and the dialects within it. Let's look at the major periods. Medieval times, after Islam.
Yeah, in the medieval period, you see the rise and fall of various Kurdish principalities and dynasties. Shadidids, Marwanids, even the Ayyubids under Saladin, though he operated on a larger stage.
Did these promote Kurmanji?
Locally, perhaps to some extent, but often the languages of administration and high culture were still Arabic and Persian. And this period also saw major migrations, Turkic invasions, Mongol invasions, all of which reshaped the demographics and linguistic interactions in the region.
Okay. Then the big one, the division between the Ottoman and Persian empires.
Huge turning point. The Battle of Chaldiran in 1514 effectively drew a line through Kurdistan, dividing it between Ottoman and Safavid Persian spheres of influence. This division lasted for centuries.
How did that affect Turmanji?
Under the Ottomans, initially, many Kurdish emirates kept a fair bit of autonomy. And this period, for roughly 16th to 18th centuries, was actually the golden age for classical Kurmanji literature. Those poets we mentioned thrived in places like Botan and Cizre.
So some space for the language initially.
Yes. But then, in the 19th century, the Ottomans tried to centralize power, break down these autonomous emirates. This led to suppression, Kurdish revolts, though these were often more about preserving local power than modern nationalism yet.
Did the Ottomans try to suppress the Kurdish language itself back then?
Not systematically for much of the period. Turkish, Arabic, Persian were the languages of state, but there wasn't a widespread policy targeting Kurdish specifically in the way we see later. Local life and identity were still largely defined by tribes and regions.
Okay, and then the game changer.
Yeah.
The collapse of those empires after World War I and the creation of modern nation states.
Absolutely devastating for Kurdish linguistic unity in many ways. Mm. New borders cut right through Kurdistan, dividing communities. And the new nation states often had very aggressive assimilationist policies.
Especially Turkey.
Turkey is the most prominent example for Kurmanji speakers. The Republic of Turkey implemented systematic suppression. Kurds were officially called Mountain Turks.
Wow.
Using Kurdish in public life, schools, media was banned for decades. Kurdish place names were changed to Turkish ones. Forced resettlements. Speaking Kurdish could land you in jail. It was a deliberate policy of linguicide, aiming for a homogeneous Turkish nation.
Have things eased up there?
Somewhat, since the 1990s. Some restrictions were lifted, private courses allowed, some broadcasting. But major issues remain, especially around mother tongue education in schools. It's still very limited.
What about in Syria?
Syria, under the Ba'athists, also pursued Arabization policies. Kurdish language use in official settings, schools, media was prohibited, cultural expression suppressed.
But that's changed recently in some areas.
Yes, significantly. In the areas under the autonomous administration of North and East Syria, Rojava Kurmanji has seen a major revival used in schools, administration, media. A very different situation there now.
In Iraq, where Sirani is also prominent.
Iraq's history is complex. Under the British Mandate and early Iraqi state, there were some attempts to use Kurdish in Kurdish areas, but they often favored Sirani. Partly, some sources suggest, due to Turkish pressure, Turkey didn't want a unified Kurmanji identity linking Kurds in Turkey and Iraq.
Interesting political maneuver.
Definitely. Later, the Ba'ath regime had harsh Arabization policies. But since 1992, in the Kurdistan Regional Government KRG area, Kurdish is official. Sirani has been the main focus of development, but Kurmanji, especially the Badini dialect spoken in Dohuk, is increasingly used and supported, though maybe still second fiddle to Sirani in practice.
You're right.
Iran's policies have fluctuated. Periods of suppression, like under Reza Shah, periods of slightly more tolerance. But Persian remains totally dominant in all official spheres. Limited space for Kurdish language development.
What about the Caucasus communities
yeah.
in the Soviet Union?
They had a unique trajectory. In Soviet Armenia, there was actually state support for Kurmanji initially. Schools, publications, those Armenian and Cyrillic alphabets we mentioned. Mm. But then came Stalin's deportations, later conflicts in the Caucasus. These communities were severely disrupted.
And the diaspora's role.
Hugely important. Especially during times of heavy suppression in Turkey, the diaspora in Europe became crucial centers for Kurmanji language maintenance, publishing, using the Hawar alphabet, developing media, kept the written language alive and evolving.
It really sounds like the political fragmentation in the 20th century was the key driver of linguistic divergence and the main obstacle to standardizing Kurdish.
Absolutely. You have these communities speaking related dialects, suddenly cut off by borders, subjected to radically different state policies, suppression here, limited support there, focus on a different dialect elsewhere.
Like Turkey discouraging Kurmanji in Iraq.
Exactly. Geopolitical games impacting language directly. Without a unified political entity, without consistent policies, the natural tendency towards dialectal differentiation just got amplified. It reinforced the separation between groups like Kurmanji and Sirani speakers, making a single standard Kurdish language practically impossible to achieve.
And even within Kurmanji, spoken across this huge area, There's a lot of variation, right? It's not monolithic.
Not at all. It's a classic dialect continuum. Gradual changes as you move across the map, no sharp breaks. But linguists do identify several broad dialect clusters based on geography and shared features.
What are the main clusters people talk about?
Things like northwestern Kurmanji, southwestern Kurmanji, northern Kurmanji, often called Serid, the border region in Turkey, southern Kurmanji, southeastern Kurmanji, which is basically Bedini in Iraq, and Anatolian Kurmanji, those scattered groups in central Turkey. That's not always perfectly neat, but those are common groupings.
And the differences between them are noticeable in vocabulary, pronunciation, grammar.
Definitely. Studies show real divergence. Take vocabulary. If you compare basic word lists from dialects at the geographical extreme, say way up in the northwest versus down in the southeast, Bedini.
Yeah.
The percentage of shared basic words might only be around 72%. That suggests they've been developing separately for quite a while, maybe at different contact histories.
And words might mean different things.
Yeah, semantic shifts happen. The word pause might mean nose in one dialect, but maybe snout or beak in another, while diffin is used for human nose. Or kiver versus berbi, both meaning stone in different places.
And borrowing patterns differ too.
Right. Southern Kurmanji, near Mardin, might have more Arabic loans. Northwestern, more Turkish influence. Southeastern, Bedini, shares some vocabulary with nearby Sirani. It reflects who their neighbors were.
What about sounds, pronunciation differences?
Oh yeah, plenty of those. Systematic sound shifts, like a standard Kurmanji A sound might become more like an A sound in some northwestern dialects, or a standard U, like U, might become U in southeastern.
Consonants too.
Yep. Southeastern Kurmanji, for example, doesn't really have a V sound. It merges with W. You get lenition weakening of sounds like B between vowels, often becoming V or disappearing in some dialects.
How they handle consonant clusters.
That varies too, like Zimun, probably from older Zman becomes Esman in southeastern, adding a vowel. Others keep Zuman or stir, keeps the S cluster in some dialects, but others break it up, like sitter.
And you mentioned Kurmanji has aspiration, that puff of air.
Yes, that's a really interesting feature. Kurmanji distinguishes between aspirated stops like PD, TG, K, and unaspirated ones, PTK, meaning the puff of air changes the word's meaning. Most Sirani dialects don't have that distinction.
Fascinating.
Oh.
And grammar differs too, not just sounds and words.
Absolutely. Morphosyntax, word structure, and sentence structure shows variation. Pronoun forms can differ, especially the U plural form. How verbs agree with subjects can vary so fine. Southeastern Bedini is known for some unique agreement patterns.
Case marking, the ize thing.
Yep, how case endings are used, especially on masculine nouns, can differ. The izev construction, that little particle linking nouns and modifiers, mal babavin, house of father of mine, shows variations.
Tense and aspect too.
Sure. How things like ongoing action, progressive aspect, are marked grammatically can vary. Bedini, for instance, seems to have grammaticalized a progressive aspect more distinctly. Even prepositions and postpositions can differ in form or usage. Small grammatical markers, like clitics or indefiniteness markers, can be present in some dialects and absent in others.
So this internal variation really paints a picture of the history. Migrations, contact zones.
Exactly. Peripheral dialects being very different might suggest longer isolation or different origins. Clusters of similar dialects show shared histories, shared innovations.
Like Bedini sharing features with Sirani because they're neighbors.
Right. Or southern Kurmanji showing more Arabic contact, northwestern, more Turkish contact. It all makes historical sense.
Could some features be really old or simplified?
Both are possible. Some dialects, maybe more stable ones like Bedini historically, might preserve older grammatical features. Other dialects, perhaps those that spread rapidly and interacted with speakers of other languages like Armenian or Aramaic, might show some simplification, maybe acting as a lingua franca. The dialect map is like reading layers of history.
And just to reiterate, the differences between Kurmanji, Sirani, and Southern Kurdish are even deeper than these internal Kurmanji variations.
Much deeper. That reflects an older historical split. Remember the big grammatical differences. Kurmanji keeping gender and case, Sirani losing them.
Right.
Sirani also shows stronger influence from Guarani, maybe Persian. Southern Kurdish has its own dialects, Kahori, Kermanshahi, etc., and unique features, like its plural suffix ale.
So probably long-term geographical separation, north, central, south, developing differently.
That's the most likely scenario. Different regions, different histories, different neighbors influencing them, leading to these major divergences over time.
It's so clear how much contact has shaped Kurmanji. Let's dive deeper into those specific influences. It really sat at a crossroads.
Absolutely, for millennia. And that contact left its mark everywhere. Vocabulary, sounds, grammar. The intensity varies, of course, depending on the language, the period, the region.
Let's start with Arabic. Huge influence across the Middle East.
Profound and multi-layered for Kurdish, too. Starts with the Islamic conquests in the 7th century. Arabic becomes the language of religion, administration, learning.
Right.
And then continued intense contact, especially in modern Iraq and Syria, where it's the official state language.
How did this shape Kurmanji specifically?
Yeah.
Sounds first.
One of the most obvious things is the presence of sounds, common in Arabic, but not typical Iranian sounds, like the pharyngeals and those throaty sounds.
Uh-huh.
And the emphatic consonants. Kurmanji often keeps these sounds when it borrows Arabic words.
Like in seat voice, maybe from Arabic ought?
Exactly. And sometimes these sounds even spread into native Kurdish words in some dialects, like that example, masi, fish becoming misi.
Yeah.
This is strongest in central Kurdish areas, less so on the Turkish-Persian edges.
And vocabulary must be massive.
Massive, across every imaginable field. Religion, mish prayer from namaz, ultimately Persian, but spread via Arabic context. Halal, haram, administration, qanun law, wazir minister, daily life, sayat hour, kuwaya coffee, concepts, fikr thought, ilm knowledge. Tons of words.
Are these borrowings consistent across dialects?
There's a deep layer shared by almost everyone, kitab, book, wet time, hikmet, wisdom. But then you get regional variations. Southern Kurmanji around Mardin, for example, has especially heavy Arabic borrowing due to intense local contact.
How does Kurmanji handle these borrowed words grammatically?
It integrates them pretty smoothly. Arabic nouns and adjectives just slot into Kurdish sentences. Often, Kurmanji creates new verbs using Arabic roots plus Kurdish endings or auxiliary verbs like kirin, to domake, or boon, to be.
Like shikir kirin, to thank.
Exactly. Shikir is Arabic, kirin is Kurdish. You also get borrowed function words, conjunctions like laken, but from Arabic laken, adverbs like helbit, of course.
What about grammatical influence beyond words? Syntax?
Less extensive than vocabulary, generally. But there are interesting points. Some suggest Arabic might influence gender assignment for new loanwords in Iraqi Kurmanji, making European loans masculine, like Arabic might, whereas Turkish Kurmanji often makes them feminine.
Mm-hmm.
There's also debate about word order in noun phrases. Sometimes you see possessor modifier order, like Saniye Maliki, Yemizin, House of Malik the Big, which mirrors Arabic syntax but is unusual for Iranian languages. Maybe some localized grammatical copying, too, like using Nima, no longer. Similarly to Arabic mut.
Okay, so deep Arabic influence. What about Persian? Closely related, long shared history.
Right. As fellow West Iranian languages, neighbors for millennia, influence is inevitable. Given Persian's long role as a dominant literary and cultural language, the influence probably flowed more from Persian to Kurdish.
In vocabulary, too. Or is it hard to tell borrowing from shared roots?
It can be tricky sometimes. There's huge overlap. But yes, definitely borrowing, especially in literature. Classical Kurdish poets were heavily influenced by Persian forms, meters, themes.
And grammatically. Beyond shared inheritance.
Well, the shared innovations we discussed earlier, the W to be, the far preservation, the past stem suffix, point to that deep historical connection. Whether it's borrowing of grammar or just intense contact leading to convergence, it shows how closely intertwined their histories are.
Okay, then Turkish. Centuries of Ottoman rule, then the Turkish Republic.
Huge impact, especially on Kurmanji spoken in Turkey. Lots of Turkish vocabulary, borrowed nouns, verbs, particles, everyday expressions.
Can Kurmanji borrow Turkish verbs easily?
Yeah, often by taking the Turkish verb stem and combining it with a Kurdish light verb like kirin or adapting it with Kurdish endings. You also see a lot of code switching and mixing among bilinguals.
Does Turkish grammar influence Kurmanji grammar?
Some research suggests possible contact-induced changes. Maybe in word order in mixed sentences. But generally, the influence is heavily lexical and mostly one way. Turkish into Kurdish, reflecting the power dynamic in Turkey.
What about shared sounds?
Sounds like for or q exist in both, but they're likely aerial features common to many languages in the region. Arabic, other Iranian languages too. Not necessarily just Turkish influence on Kurmanji.
Okay. Now, Armenian. Long history of coexistence.
Very long, especially in historical Armenia, Eastern Anatolia, close contact, lots of bilingualism historically, significant Kurdophone Armenian populations before the genocide.
So Armenian influence on Kurmanji?
Definitely linguistic evidence for it in the contact zones. Vocabulary, phonetics, maybe word formation. Some scholars even talk about an Armenian substrate, Armenian being there first, influencing the later arriving Kurdish.
Did Kurdish influence Armenian?
Seems mostly lexical influence from Kurdish into Western Armenian dialects, maybe less structurally deep than the other way around. There's some speculation Armenian contact might have influenced Kurmanji's gender system, but that needs more research.
And finally, Aramaic Syriac. Ancient languages still spoken there.
Millennia of contact. Aramaic was the lingua franca before Arabic. And Neo-Aramaic dialects are still spoken by Christian and historically Jewish communities right alongside Kurds, especially in northern Iraq, SC Turkey, and W Iran.
Bilingualism must have been common.
Extremely common for Neo-Aramaic speakers for centuries. This led to massive Kurdish influence on Neo-Aramaic vocabulary, grammar, everything.
What about Aramaic influence on Kurdish?
Less studied, but definitely there. Lexical borrowing, for sure, though hard to distinguish sometimes from Arabic loans, maybe shared proverbs. And again, there's speculation. It did contact with Semitic languages, Aramaic and Arabic, which have grammatical gender, help reinforce or shape gender in Kurmanji, which is unusual among its closest Iranian relatives like Persian.
Plausible, I guess.
It's an interesting question. The nature of the influence also varied. Some Jewish Aramaic dialects east of the Zab River, Sirani area, show more direct Kurdish borrowing. Dialects west of the Zab, Kurmanji area, often adapt Kurdish grammatical patterns using native Aramaic words. Really complex interactions.
Wow. It's like Kurmanji is a sponge absorbing bits from everyone around it, but still remaining distinctly itself.
That's a great way to put it. Arab-Persian influence. Deep, pervasive, tied to power and culture. Turkish. Substantial in Turkey, more recent, tied to state power. Armenian Aramaic. More localized, intimate, sometimes reciprocal from centuries of living side by side. The whole region is a linguistic convergence zone. Untangling inheritance, borrowing, and aerial spread is the constant challenge.
Okay, let's switch to how Kurmanji has been written. Sounds like it's had a few different scripts over time.
It has. Compared to Persian or Arabic, widespread writing is more recent. We know literature blossomed from the 16th century, but before that, documentation is really thin.
Any truth to claims about ancient scripts?
Yeah.
Cuneiform.
Mostly speculative, lacking solid proof. The earliest concrete thing we have is that 14th, 15th century prayer in the Armenian alphabet.
Right.
There are also some intriguing historical references to documents from Hiraman, written on deerskin in an Aramaic-derived script, maybe related to Pahlavi used for Middle Persian, but those texts haven't survived as far as we know.
So for centuries, the main script was borrowed from Arabic and Persian.
Exactly. From the 16th century right up to the early 20th, the dominant way to write Kurdish, including all that classical Kurmanji poetry, was the Perso-Arabic script.
Was it a perfect fit?
Not really. Arabic script was designed for Arabic, adapted for Persian, and needed further adaptation for Kurdish. Vowels especially are tricky. These adaptations were often inconsistent between writers.
Even the first Kurdish newspaper used it.
Yes. Kurdistan started in Cairo in 1898, used Perso-Arabic script for Kurmanji. And importantly, a standardized version of this script, the Sirani alphabet, is still the main script for Central Kurdish, Sirani, today, and also used for Kurmanji in Iraq and Iran sometimes.
Then give the Soviet experiments.
Right. In the Soviet Union, especially Soviet Armenia, they tried different things with official backing. First, a modified Armenian alphabet in the 1920s.
Okay.
Then, briefly, a Latin-based alphabet during the Soviet Latinization push.
Like for Turkish and other languages?
Similar idea, yeah. But it didn't stick for Kurdish. In 1945, they introduced a Cyrillic-based alphabet designed by Hesye Sindi that was used for Kurmanji in the USSR for decades.
But the really big shift for modern Kurmanji writing was the Hoar alphabet, the Latin-based one.
Absolutely. The Hoar alphabet, also called the Bedouksan alphabet after its main creator, Siladet Ali Bedirksen. This was a game changer.
When and where did this happen?
Early 1930s, developed by Kurdish intellectuals in exile in French Mandate Syria. They had left Turkey after the Republic was established and Kurdish identity was being suppressed.
So a response to the situation in Turkey?
Partly, yes. It was a conscious move to modernize, standardize Kurdish, and Ataturk had just switched Turkish to a Latin script.
Right, 1928.
So adopting a similar Latin script might have seemed strategic, maybe making it easier for Kurds in Turkey eventually, or just aligning with perceived Western modernity.
Tell us about Siladet Bedirksen. Sounds like a key figure.
Hugely influential. Prince Selda Ali Bedirksen from the famous Bedirksen family of Botan. Highly educated Istanbul, Munich fluent in multiple languages, a diplomat, writer, linguist, activist.
And his goal for the alphabet.
Phonetic consistency. He wanted a system where one letter ideally represented one sound, avoiding digraphs like she or if possible. He tried to collaborate with Tufik Wibi in Iraq, but that didn't pan out. So he launched it in 1932 with his brother Kamaran. His 1931 grammar book already used the system he was developing.
And the Hawar magazine was the vehicle to spread it.
Absolutely crucial. Hawar, the call or the cry, published by Bedirksen in Damascus from 1932 to 1943, intermittently, it was the platform.
Did it use only Latin script?
Initially, both Latin and Arabic scripts, but from issue 24 in 1935, it went exclusively Latin. That really cemented the new alphabet.
What kind of stuff did it publish?
All sorts. Literature, folklore, linguistic studies, translations. It sparked a real renaissance for Kurmanji language and culture in exile. The launch date is even celebrated by some as Kurdish Language Day.
So what are the basics of the Hawar alphabet? How does it work?
It's based on the standard Latin alphabet, 31 letters in total. It takes the basic 26 letters and adds 5 with diacritics, little marks for specific Kurmanji sounds.
Which ones?
You have sisa dia for the C sound s, E circumflex for a long E sound s, E circumflex, pila. It is circumflex for a long E sound s, S, A sisa dia for the S and S, and the circumflex for a long U sound s.
Okay, C says s, E, so got it. Both uppercase and lowercase.
Yes, and it's systematic with vowels. It clearly distinguishes short vowels. E like bet, I sell a bit, you like put.
From the long vowels, A is C, S, A, so, E, so go, and U, so, full.
Exactly. A very clear vowel system. The Bedirksen also proposed letters for those Arabic pharyngeal sounds, for and of for food, but they haven't become standard parts of the main 31 letters.
Seems pretty logical. How widely was it adopted?
It gained huge traction. It's now the main script used for Kurmanji by Kurds in Turkey, in Syria, and across the diaspora. Increasingly used by Kurds in the Caucasus too, shifting from Cyrillic.
What about in Iraqi Kurdistan?
There, the official script and the one dominant for Sirani is the Arabic-based Sirani alphabet. But the Hawar Latin script is used for Kurmanji, Badini materials there too, just maybe not as universally as the Sirani script overall.
Is the spelling totally standardized now using Hawar, or still some variations?
While Bedirksen and Hawar set the foundation, there's still some variation and ongoing discussion about standardization. How to write compound words, how best to spell loan words, minor grammatical points. These things are still being worked out. There are modern spelling guides trying to promote more unity, like Bahus Baran's work.
It really feels like creating this alphabet was more than just a linguistic exercise. It was political, cultural.
Oh, absolutely. It was a powerful statement made in exile against the backdrop of Turkish nationalism and suppression. Choosing Latin script mirroring Turkey, but for Kurdish, was a move towards modernity, a break from the Perso-Arabic past of the Ottoman Persian empires.
An act of self-determination.
Exactly. A tool to foster Kurdish literacy, culture, national consciousness, distinct from the dominant states, which makes the current situation with multiple scripts still in use so poignant.
Hawar Latin for Kurmanji in Turkey-Syria diaspora, Sirani Arabic for Central Kurdish and Iraqaran, and also for Kurmanji there.
It's a direct reflection of the political fragmentation. Borders, different state policies, promoting or suppressing certain dialects or scripts. It's created practical barriers to communication and literacy across the Kurdish-speaking world, reinforcing those linguistic and political divides.
What an incredibly complex journey. This has been a fantastic deep dive. Let's try to wrap up the key takeaways.
Okay. So we saw Kurmanji's tricky classification, Northwestern Iranian at its core, but heavily influenced by Southwestern languages like Persian through long contact.
Right. Its origins are somewhat obscure due to the lack of early texts, really emerging as a distinct written language relatively late from the 16th century onwards.
And its spread and diversification into dialects were massively shaped by history migrations, empires, and especially those 20th century borders and state policies leading to fragmentation.
Plus, absorbing huge influences from neighbors, Arabic, Persian, Turkish, Armenian, Aramaic, making it a real linguistic melting pot.
And finally, the crucial role of writing systems, particularly the development of the Latin-based Hawar alphabet by Selda Bedirksen, which became both a practical tool and a powerful symbol for modern Kurmanji identity.
And that constant theme running through it all, the interplay between how the language changed internally and how external forces, politics, contact, state control really pushed and pulled it in different directions.
Exactly. Those external factors have been incredibly decisive for Kurmanji's status, its standardization struggles, and its fragmentation.
Are there ongoing challenges?
For sure. Standardization is still a work in progress. Language rights remain a struggle in several countries. Political instability, migration continue to impact speaker communities. And linguists still have tons of research, documentation, and analysis to do.
But it's still a vibrant language.
Remarkably so, especially in the diaspora and in places like Rojava or parts of the KRG where it has more space to breathe and develop. Its resilience is incredible.
So, Kurmanji Kurdish, a major world language, complex, fascinating history, reflecting evolution, contact, resilience, all tied up with the Kurdish people's culture, struggles, and identity.
Couldn't say it better myself. It's a compelling story.
Which leaves us with a final thought for you, our listener. Considering this tangled history, the political divisions, the multiple writing systems still in use, what does the future hold for a Kurdish linguistic unity, or even just for Kurmanji's continued development across these diverse communities?
Yeah, and maybe thinking about the role language itself plays. Can it bridge these divides, or does it inevitably reflect the political realities? How does language shape identity, or identity shape language, in a context as complex and charged as Kurdistan's? Something to definitely mull over.